Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, starting with the NFL, there was some crazy hype surrounding that Sunday night matchup. Tom Brady v. Aaron Rodgers, a combined 33 seasons, 19 Pro Bowls, a half a dozen Super Bowl rings, five MVP trophies. The two most dominant players of a generation. Two first ballot Hall of Famers, arguably the two best to ever do it. If you were to say to me, argue for one or the other, I could do it. I can make a good argument for both. Going up against each other, though, for only the second time ever. Good thing they didn't beat that storyline into the ground. Jerome Bettis, being from Detroit, thought that Rodgers v. Brady was getting a little too much run. Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka work out together, had enough of that TB12 v. A-Rodg showdown. Brady Quinn's sister marrying A.J. Hawk thought there was a little too much attention being put on the two dudes under center and not the other 20 on the field. And that was before they dragged old 45 into that mess.
A lot of talk going on these days about who is the greatest ever, about who has the titles, the raw talent, the most clutch moments. I get it. It's a tough call. I mean, even the jersey numbers are the same. But maybe the best way to settle this debate is to play it out head to head. I'll watch that.
Damn, Mike. Thanks. That is some hashtag analysis. I mean, did you hear that, guy? People debate who the greatest quarterback of all time is. Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady have the same jersey number. The ceiling is the roof.
The ceiling is the roof.
Yeah, it is. I mean, is it not enough that we get Brady v. Rodgers for just the second time? We get Brady v. Rodgers, and then it's a green light to unleash every whack take ever. You needed a hazmat suit and a panic room to survive all the lava that was flowing. Tom v. Aaron wasn't just an all-time great quarterback matchup. It was a purge movie. There were no rules. Lawlessness took over social. Hot takes, Mount Rushmores. Hell, I think I even saw a Let Pete Rose into the Hall of Fame riot breakout. So let me just settle this once and for all. Let me settle this for everybody. Let me tell you who the GOAT really is. The Hood. William Steven Belichick. Because that might have been the most Patriots win of all time. If you want to know why people lose their minds when they debate things like Brady v. Rodgers, it's because both sides are right. Nobody plays quarterback better than Aaron Rodgers. Nobody has won more and done it longer than Tom Brady. Immovable force v. unstoppable object. The entire world blows up. But here's an argument that is not hard to understand. Here is something that is not hard to debate. Belichick is the GOAT. Hell, Bob Kraft knows that.
I'm gonna call upon the man. There's no Billy Goat here. It's only Bill the Goat. Bill Belichick, the greatest coach of all time.
Man, I would have loved to have been in that room when his kid or one of the staffers coached him up on that one. Hey, do this, Pa. Do this, Bobby. Do this. There is no Billy Goat. He's Bill the Goat.
Bill.
Dude, then drop the mic and run around the stadium high-fiving everybody like you're Cal Ripken. Patriots go out, but here's the point. They go out and they beat the Packers without their Hall of Fame tight end, without their starting running back. The Patriots went out and they beat Aaron Rodgers in the most Patriots way ever. Not that pretty at all. Not that dominant at all. In fact, they were on the ropes for a minute or so. And then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, Green Bay commits a turnover. New England's up 14. And you're like, damn, the Hood did it again. And for the second week in a row, Cordarrelle Patterson led the Patriots in rushing. The Vikings used a first rounder on this guy, but they let him walk because they gave up on finding a way to use him. The Raiders gave him away for a swap of late round draft picks. And then the Hood gets this guy, plugs him in at running back, and all of a sudden he's a Ferrari. With Gronk missing, the passing game goes through Josh Gordon, the same dude the Browns gave up on and sent to New England for a fifth-round pick. Talent has never been his problem. Conquering his demons has been. Yet you throw this dude into the Patriot way, and then he goes off. 5 catches, buck 30, 55-yard dagger that put the Pack to sleep.
2nd and 10, toss to the left side. That one caught. Breaking free is Gordon at the 30, down the sideline to the 20, at the 10, to the 5, and in for the touchdown. Julian Edelman left in the air trying to pull the pass in. It soared over his head into the waiting arms of Josh Gordon, who went 55 yards untouched for 6, and it's 30-17.
Westwood won. So what I'm saying is, Rodgers v. Brady Part 2 was essentially the story of these guys' careers, right? At least recently. One quarterback who did everything he possibly could to try to compensate for the fact that the dudes around him are not up to snuff. The other managed to win with a group of guys that everybody else thought couldn't get it done. So what we have here is less a statement on two amazing quarterbacks and more a statement on the guys in charge of the two quarterbacks. I mean, you can dig into the numbers, you can compare the stats, and you could say Tommy got the best of Aaron last night. Or you can look at the way the hood turned the Pack inside out and just understand that TB12 is the GOAT, if he is, because he and the hood are the greatest partnership between a coach and a player ever. And that's, to me, what makes that whole soap opera between the two of them so bizarre. These two dudes need each other. They bring out the best in each other. Neither would be what each is without the other. Brady is not Brady without the hood. The hood is not the hood without Brady. And after almost 20 years, they probably do get sick of each other. Hell, Brady may even hate the old man's guts. But here's what he doesn't get sick of: winning. And New England is right where they always are, 7-2. Racking up W's, doing it despite injuries and a slow start, and with a deadly efficient offense and some gritty, opportunistic defense. Bottom line then, this was not a showdown between two quarterbacks playing to be the GOAT. It was a dude in a cutoff hoodie with a permanent case of the red ass, flexing one more time. Nobody's better than the hood, and we saw it again last night. Josh McDaniels may have had a little something to do with it, but nobody's better than the old man in the cutoff sleeves. Mike Freeman. Mike, what's up? Good to have you back. How are you?
I appreciate you mentioning that, Jim, very much. How are you, my man?
Mike, I'm doing great. I'm going to ask you about that book in a minute. Let me ask you about last night's game first, though. Watching the Packers and Patriots, Mike, how much of that game was about the battle between Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, because that's all we heard about? And then how much of that was about the battle between Mike McCarthy and Bill Belichick?
Well, it turned out we turned into that game for the two quarterbacks, and then it turned out to be the Belichick show. I mean, we get tired of talking about how great the Patriots are and how much they win, but I don't know what else to say half the time when I watch them, Jim. I mean, especially with Belichick, and last night's game was a perfect example of this, of just Belichick's coaching acumen, how good he is, how he just completely obliterated McCarthy in every way. Comes out, starts the game with a fast offense, runs some trick plays, completely dissected the Packers defense and with Brady, and then did some things on defense to confuse Rodgers a little bit. It was a coaching clinic. And we say this all the time, that he does this, and it gets just so old, but it's so great because he keeps maintaining the standard of excellence and greatness. And everyone wants to say he cheats. He doesn't. Everyone wants to knock them down. But what we're seeing is just, this is what a dynasty looks like when you read about dynasties from the past. We are living one now. We're watching one dominate the sport and continue to be very high up in the sport. They have a few hiccups along the way. They lose Super Bowls. They do. But they get to them, and along the way, they just completely kick people's butts and outsmart them, out-hustle them, outwork them.
Do you want to fade Trevor Price? Then get to my bookie for Monday Night Football and make it happen. You know, ever since I started doing this podcast, people have been asking me over and over again for advice. Normally, they want to know who to bet. Who do you bet this week? Listen, the truth is, I don't know, right? I can give you an educated take, but I don't know for certain. Now, I know a lot of you think you do know. I know a lot of you know you know. If that's the case, you need to check out my bookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. This is why I always tell people to bet with my bookie. Trust me, they are the very best bet this season. They have been in business for years, they have great reviews online, and their mobile site is so easy to use. I would only recommend a service to you that I've been using myself. This is why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join right now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code ROME and activate that offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. Do not forget to use the promo code ROME when creating your account, and you can claim up to $1,000 in free play. You play, you win, you get paid with MyBookie. We're talking to Mike Freeman. Put another way, Mike, in a piece that you wrote for Bleacher Report, you said that what Belichick did to McCarthy was, quote, a coaching ass-whooping, quote, end of quote. Like, when you see the offensive schemes from the Patriots or from Sean Payton or Sean McVay or Andy Reid, and then you compare them to what the Packers run, what kind of thoughts do you have? What do you think?
Well, it's a point that is – I don't think we can make it enough in how – when you look at the rest of the league, Sean Payton's one of the great offensive minds of his generation. He's a Hall of Fame coach. Look at what the Rams did. McVay comes in and just transforms that offense overnight. Even in Carolina, what Cam Newton is doing, what they're doing with that offense and McCaffrey, you see all this creative playmaking and scheming from all these really good coaches. And then you look at the Packers, and all they do is just rely on Aaron Rodgers to bail them out. There's not a lot of creativity. There's not a lot of really smart play design. It's all just rely on Aaron, throw a couple routes, do a couple things, and then just hope Aaron bails you out. And most of the time, because he's so great, he can do that. But you're starting to see teams sort of catch up to what McCarthy's doing, as opposed to what, like, the Saints are doing. Every time you watch a Saints game, there's 17 guys open. It's unbelievable. The Patriots always have somebody open. In this league where defenses are so hamstrung, offenses should dominate, and they do, except in Green Bay. It's unbelievable to watch at times, just watch Aaron Rodgers, who is so good, struggle just to get guys open when you see all these other teams doing that. Everyone now does that, except the Packers.
We're talking to Mike Freeman. It makes you wonder, doesn't it, Mike? If Aaron Rodgers is as good as he is playing in that system, and he might be the best to ever play that position, what would he be like playing for one of these other coaches in one of these different schemes? I mean, you can only imagine the kind of numbers he'd put up. But go back to New England for a minute. They lost a couple of games early in the season. Everybody started to freak out, but this is pretty much what they do, and now they've won six straight, and they've been banged up. Kansas City, Mike, still has the best record in the AFC. Are they the team to beat right now, or does that honor still belong to the Pats?
It's a great question. It's hard to count out New England when you have Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. We're talking about these teams and these offenses that constantly know how to scheme people open and generate a lot of offense. Well, Kansas City, I mean, what Mahomes is doing, what Andy Reid is doing is just remarkable. They're the epitome of that in some ways. So I still think Kansas City will find a way to sort of get things done. But it's really hard to count out New England. It's really hard to count out the Patriots. Always, always hard to count out Tom Brady.
Mike Freeman is my guest. You talk about Brady, you talk about Aaron Rodgers, you got to put Drew Brees in that same category. I mean, the guy just continues to get it done. I think he looks as good to me, Mike, as he has ever looked. What do you make of the way he showed up yesterday against the Rams?
Well, I had a little static there, Jim. My Star Trek communicator went out for a second.
You all right? Does it work now?
It's
you better now?
No.
All right, good.
It's better now.
Good. Good. May the force be with you.
You know what you saw with Drew Brees? You saw a guy who always does that and is the most accurate thrower we've seen, one of the most accurate throwers we've ever seen. I mean, he just... I know he throws a lot of short stuff, And I know that's sort of the criticism of his high completion percentage. He just throws a lot of short routes, but not anymore. I mean, Michael Thomas has transformed that offense. Sean Payton has always transformed that offense. And now Drew Brees is just taking advantage of that. I'm telling you, Jim, Alvin Kamara, I mean, every time he gets the ball, he's like stopped 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage and then runs for eight. He is the most underrated, I think, offensive player in the sport. We focus a lot on Gurley and some of these other offensive players, Adam Thielen or Michael Thomas or some of these other guys. And then Alvin Kamara is unbelievable. And he is helping. You see a lot of these situations in the NFL where a guy helps a quarterback extend their career. And you're seeing that in New Orleans. Alvin Kamara has transformed that offense and helped Drew Brees continue to be great. And he is going to be the key to the Heat. They could beat anybody, anywhere, I think, because they have Kamara and because Drew Brees is so good. But Kamara makes that offense, to me, portable. It can go anywhere in the league and beat anyone at any time. And that makes New Orleans really tough.
Well, and because, Mike, also their defense is getting better and better, and if you've got to go through their house to get to the Super Bowl, they're going to be awfully tough to beat. Now, Mike, you and I go back a little bit, and we're kind of old school in this regard. You remember, as I remember, what it was like to watch Joe Horn and to interview Joe Horn. What did you make of Michael Thomas's celebration?
If I was his coach, I would be a little irritated because it'll cost you yardage. As a fan, I loved it. It was funny. The minute he did it, I thought about Joe Horn, like I'm sure you did, Jim. It was hilarious. And just the fact that he actually took time at some point this week or before the game and hit two flip phones on both goalposts.
Dude, hid them? How about finding them? Where the hell do you find a flip phone?
Yeah, he did it. Yes. It was hilarious. I mean, I love that stuff. I understand why a coach might be irritated. I get it. I totally get it. But when you see the celebrations, like the one in Seattle, now that one with Michael Thomas, it was, you know, it's illegal, but it's still funny. But all these celebrations have really, one of the underrated, sort of not talked about reasons why the NFL has had a rebound ratings-wise, popularity-wise, is not just because there's more offense, that's the biggest part, and because the games are good, that's the biggest part, but also because you're seeing players celebrate, relax. The league looks less stuffy as it's been in the past. The league was always a stuffy league that just didn't have fun, and now you see the players having fun, and it's really interesting to watch the transformation in just a short year of the image of the league, and the players have always been the lifeblood of it, but they weren't always allowed to be themselves, and now they are. So I love that, but I get it why the coaches might be upset.
Mike Freeman, my guest. All right, Mike, I'm running out of time, but I want to get to this. As I mentioned off the top, you are an incredibly prolific author, but you stepped out, and you recently published a science fiction short story. Those who know you are not surprised by this, but what inspired you to write it, and what was the experience like?
It was really fun. It was very different. My first science fiction short story called Melanin. I tried to write something that's sort of reflective of the times. These are tough times for all of us as we look around the changing world and how we've become a little bit polarized. So I wanted to write something that sort of reflected that, but also funny and fun. It was very different and unlike anything I've ever done, but it turned out to be, I think, pretty good. And you will be shocked by this, Jim, but there are some Star Trek references in it. I know that stuns you.
Are you kidding?
Exactly.
Dude, don't troll me.
You didn't see that coming.
Don't troll me. I didn't see that coming at all. Listen, so now that I know that, I want this thing even worse. Where can I and everybody else buy it?
You can go on Amazon and buy it. It's on Amazon right now. It's called Melanin. And I always appreciate you. You're a really, really good dude. I always tell people that. And you always help out your friends, and your friends always appreciate you, so thank you.
Now, you know,
and
Mike.
And you know what I say, Jim? You know what I say? I say, live long and prosper, baby.
Monday's Daily Jungle is brought to you by my pals at Ferguson. Listen to this. No matter how big or small your team is, Ferguson has a winning game plan for pro contractors with thousands of plumbing repair parts, knowledgeable associates, and the largest national footprint in the game. When the pressure is on, you can count on Ferguson. I've been talking to and talking Wisconsin up lately. It's because I have. It's the second time the boys and I have been to Wisconsin in recent months. Janet has been there three times in the last few months. The reason we're kicking it in Wisconsin is it's Jake's senior year in high school. He's finishing up the application process. He's narrowing his choice. So we all had appointments all afternoon Friday on campus. But before we did that, remember, last Thursday I did the show. We flew out. We got in late. We were starving. We wanted to get our grub on, but it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. No room service, so we hit the streets. Downtown Madison. We walked down the street and we find some pizza joint that I'd never heard of. Little did I know, it was one of the most famous pizza joints in the Midwest. Ian's. We may not have known it, but the second I tweeted out a pic of a macaroni and cheese pizza, my phone started to blow up with, dude, you're at Ian's. So, I got up to speed right quick about that spot. No, I did not slam any of the mac and cheese pie. Yes, the pizza at Ian's ruled. So, we had some pizza. We napped it out. We got up. We spent all Friday afternoon on campus. We met with folks from the Comm Arts and Journalism departments. I met with another high-ranking school official. Once again, we were blown away by everybody we talked to and everything we saw at the University of Wisconsin. One of the professors who we met with, a professor, an extremely distinguished dude, pulled me aside privately after the meeting and said, you know, I was at the Madison tour stop back in the day. A professor attending the tour stop. You know, maybe at that time he was not a professor, but he is now. It's pretty awesome. Then we had lunch on campus. Crushed a couple of Spotted Cow beers. Hit the restaurant Rare later that night for dinner. You may have seen me tweet a pic of a slab of the cow that they had prepared. I mean, Wisconsin, right? Mac and cheese pizza. Gigantic pieces of cow. All in all, a great Friday in Madtown. But now it's time to fall out for a few hours. Get ready for game day. I keep hearing about game day in Madison, game day at Wisconsin. So we fall out, we get up, we're fired up. Saturday morning, I head straight over to South Charter Street for our tailgate. That was not some random tailgate. I was not walking down some random street trying to crash some random fuel up. South Charter Street has the house where Kelly Call lived maybe 30 years ago. Kelly Call is the president of CBS Entertainment. President of CBS Entertainment. And no clones, no need to tell me to pick up the name that I just dropped. He's a big-time network executive. And while we're both technically CBS family, I mean, him much higher up on the chain than me, we never met before. But this is a tremendous guy and a fiercely proud member of the Badger Mafia. And when he found out that we were going to Madison for the first time, he said, if there's anything you need, let me know. And my man knows everyone and everything about that school. He's developed friendships and relationships while he was there that have lasted a lifetime. How do I know? Because I met his crew. Slammed PBRs with his crew. And we did it at the house that those dudes all lived in on South Charter like 30 years ago before Saturday's game against Rutgers. All successful, all professional, all powerful dudes, and they were all back where it started, killing PBRs and getting ready for the game. Oh, did I mention that I was reaching for PBRs instead of coffee first thing Saturday morning? Hell yes, I was. Wisco's finest. And let me tell you something. It tasted like butter. It tasted like Cristal in a can. Only a million times better. Man, I hated to leave that tailgate. I hated to leave the tailgate because that meant going to the game and downgrading to Spotted Cow. But you gotta do what you gotta do, right? So we go to the game. Just know this. I will not wait for my next trip to Wisconsin to start one of my mornings with a PBR. Know that. So we get to the game. It's a who's who from the university. I meet some prominent boosters. I get to hang out with basketball coach Greg Gard. Spent a few minutes with the AD and Badger legend Barry Alvarez. He was extremely gracious. He remembered coming on the show back in the day. But let me tell you about Barry. My man is still intense. Intense, especially on game day. So I was not going to overstay my welcome in his box. I got some FaceTime with Heisman Trophy winner and Badger legend Ron Dayne. Hawk, you've never heard of him. He played in the NFL. He won the Heisman Trophy. I had not spoken to Ron Dayne in a minute or two, so it was great to get caught up with him. Good, good dude. I met Condoleezza Rice in the box. That's right, Hawk. I know you've heard of her. She was on the committee with Barry, so she had been wanting to come to a Wisconsin game, and I got to meet her. Very nice. So all in all, an amazing Badger game day experience. We tailgated. We smashed PBRs. We went to the game. We got some FaceTime with some Badger royalty. I saw a Badger win, smashed a couple of spotted cows, wandered around downtown Madison looking for a place to eat with under an hour wait. And that was not easy to find. All right, so I can't get to the end of this, I don't think, at the end of this hour. Here's what happened, though. After that entire day, I get back to the hotel room, gassed, and it was 5:30 p.m., and I'm gassed. But this is what happens when you get up and you drink your breakfast. This is what happens when you have an 11 o'clock game. This is all great. One of the best days I've ever had, except we had a big-time horse race at 6:30 p.m. local time. And I'm gassed out at 5:30. So what did I do? Went with the 20-minute power nap, geared up for Cruel Intention.
They're at the 5-16th pole. Lux Royal Flush went through for a share of the lead, but is now pushed on by Stevens and is losing ground again. And it's Galilean and Cruel Intention, the joint leaders past the quarter pole and the Golden State Juvenile. They've drawn well clear of their rivals at the top of the lane. And Cruel Intention outside Galilean, set for a stirring stretch struggle. Galilean on the inside of Cruel Intention. It's Galilean about a neck in front from Cruel Intention at the 16th pole. Cruel Intention coming right back at him. Cruel Intention and Galilean, a titanic tussle. They hit the line in a photo. Cruel Intention ahead to Galilean, a minute away. Lux Royal Flush third.
Listen, really quickly, there's a story behind that horse, but Cruel Intention won that race. Great finish. Unbelievable throwdown. Listen, I know a lot of you don't want to hear it. I know a lot of you are just here to hate on horse racing. Listen, try to wrap your dome around this. Give it a shot. There is a horse right now with a jungle interest, and you should follow it. And if you're in Southern California and he runs again, and I'll let you know when he does, if he does, when he does, you should go check it out. And then tell me you hate it. There's a really good backstory behind that one, and that was an amazing race. If you saw that on CBS Sports Network, you saw how close that was. We are joined by Syracuse quarterback Eric Dungy. Eric, it's really nice to have you on. Hey. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on.
Great to have you on. All right, so a team fell behind 10-0 early on Saturday, and for a program, Eric, that had not won a conference game on the road in quite some time and had not won in November in quite some time, you know, I could argue that it would be easy to panic, but head coach Dino Babers said the reaction was, quote, just to chill, Pulp Fiction, chill, honey bunny, just chill. You guys the best. Is that what it was like on the sideline? And then how do you explain that attitude and that approach?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Wake Forest has given us some different looks that we expected. They really went all out to stop the pass. So Coach realized that, and, you know, him and I talked, and, you know, obviously we were able to run the ball really well against them. I think Dante Jarvion and Mo Neal also scored rushing touchdowns. So it was a big day on the ground for us, which is a big thing because in years past, you know, usually we were just reliant on our passing offense. But now that we got a little balance, it's nice. So defenses try to stop the pass that, you know, we can rely on that run.
Glad you brought that up because the week before you threw for more than 400 yards in the win over NC State. Then on Saturday, you and the offense ran 60 times for 264 yards and 5 touchdowns. So you touched on it, but what's that say about the versatility of the offense?
I think it's huge. Like I said, I mean, in years past, that was kind of our issue was the, you know, it's finding that balance in our offense, but you know, now that we got some versatile backs, and I think it really just, you know, goes to our O-line. I think, you know, we got a lot of experience up there, and I'm so proud of the way that they've played this season, and they really meshed together well, and I think that's, you know, one of the main factors of success for our team.
Syracuse quarterback Eric Dungy joining us. Now, Saturday's win was the program's first win as a top 25 team since 2001 when Dwight Freeney was there. It's pretty amazing. How much pride do you take in the fact that you and your classmates have played such a huge role in turning around the program?
I think it's huge. You know, the senior class, you know, we've been through a lot together. We've had, you know, some rough seasons in the past. You know, injuries kind of got the best of us in the years prior, but it means a lot. You know, we still got 3 games left in the regular season, which is big for us. And we got Louisville coming up, which is, you know, it's not going to be an easy game. I mean, they haven't had the best record, but I mean, they still got all the athletes in the world. So it's not going to be an easy task, but, you know, I'm just proud of the way, you know, this class has stick together through everything. And, you know, we got a lot of young guys who have been coming up and they're getting that success. So I think the tradition around here is starting to change.
Yeah, I got to ask how. I mean, it's changing and it's changing quickly. The program is now number 13 in the AP poll, which is the school's highest ranking since 98. When you first arrived there, things were not going so well. So how do you explain that dramatic a turnaround and how quickly it's happening?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we went through a coaching change, and when Coach Babers came in, you know, I really had no idea who he was, and he kind of took me under his wing. And I mean, he just brings out the best in me, and he knows I'm a competitor, and he brings that competitive spirit out in me, which is a huge thing. You know, I just love to compete, and you know, he just brings out the best in guys, I'd say. So we got a lot of respect for him, and he's got respect for us, and I think, you know, people are finally starting to buy in. In the years past, you know, people were okay with just trying to make a bowl game, but this year, you know, that wasn't our goal. You know, the bowl game was expected, and you know, we're trying to do better things, bigger and better things.
We're talking to Eric Dungy, Syracuse quarterback. You know, in terms of Dino Babers, his postgame talks are legendary. What's that atmosphere in the locker room like when he gets rolling after a big win?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. You know, Coach Babers always has got something funny to say. You know, he's an older guy, so some of the younger guys don't really know what he's saying most of the time. But I think it's funny. He's just got a lot of energy, a lot of excitement, and it just carries over throughout the team.
That's pretty funny. He's an older guy, so some of the younger guys don't really get it. It's kind of rolling. Yeah. Hey, listen, you're not going to make it about you, but I'm going to make it about you for 1 minute, because as much as that win over Wake Forest was focused on the ground, you still move past Donovan McNabb and Marvin Graves on the school's career passing list. These are a couple of Syracuse legends. What's it mean to hear your name mentioned alongside theirs?
I mean, it's an incredible honor. You know, I grew up watching Donovan McNabb play for the Eagles. He was one of my idols, and then I would never thought that, you know, my name would be mentioned in the same sense with him. So, I mean, it's an incredible honor, and, you know, obviously we throw the ball a lot more than he did. He's a tremendous player, and he always will be. I mean, I still idolize him, but, I mean, all I can really say about that is what an honor it is.
You know, you're from Oregon, and when you're not training in the off season, you get to get out on the water, carve it up on the water board, or wakeboard, I should say. How did you first get into wakeboarding?
You know, I actually just kind of picked it up about 2 or 3 years ago. You know, when I was younger, my parents never really let me do, you know, the water wakeboarding, you know, skiing on the mountain or anything like that. They didn't want me to get hurt, and I was always playing, you know, 3 or 4 sports year-round. So, you know, summer I kind of just picked it up, and at first I was pretty bad at it, but then I just tried to get better and better at it, and you know, it's a lot of fun. It's pretty relaxing for me, and you know, I always just love, you know, adrenaline stuff, and that's one of the things I like to do.
Yeah, it's relaxing for you, but not for moms. Your mother has said the quote, "These are the things that made me old before my time." All right, so there's a place called the Pie Factory. What is the Pie Factory? How do you get there, and what's that all about?
I mean, it's just an abandoned pie factory on the river where I'm from. I mean, I don't know how long it's been abandoned for, but it's run down, but it's about, you know, 70, 75 feet high, and you kind of got to scale up a sketchy tree and, you know, make a little leap like 40 feet high to get up there. And once you're up there, the only way down is to jump down in the water. But, you know, it's just kind of one of those things when you're younger that, you know, you just love the adrenaline. So, you know, my friends and I would go there, you know, jump it 3 or 4 times a day. So it's just, you know, one of those things that we did in the summer.
Well, so no wonder you're freaking your mom out. Your sister Emily says that you were, quote, kind of the runt of the family, but he was just so competitive, end quote. Does that sound about right to you? And what was it like for you growing up with really competitive siblings?
Oh, definitely. You know, I was the youngest, my brother and sister. I mean, my brother and I used to, you know, go at it all the time. He used to, you know, beat me down, but I was never giving up. And I think that's, you know, where I kind of got it from. And my dad never really let me give up. And we'd be, you know, we had a basketball court in the backyard, and, you know, no matter what, I always had to end on a win. So I'd be out there for 2 or 3 hours sometimes when I was younger, you know, barely able to dribble the ball, but I had to beat my brother and sister. So that's kind of where it just came from. But, you know, I'm very blessed to have grown up with such a great family. You know, my sister's one of my biggest supporters, you know, I love her so much, and as well as my brother. You know, I wouldn't be here without them.
No, I got to think that you would not be, and certainly they've all made sacrifices for you to be where you are right now. And where you are, Babers was talking about the senior class and what it's meant to that program and how it's turned everything around, and that you're going to be remembered for years to come. So when people think of you and your fellow seniors, what do you want them to remember?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not necessarily sure. That's, you know, just one of those things that I've really just put my nose down every day and just try to bring success back to this program. You know, the tradition here is so rich. You look at, you know, 44, Jim Brown, Ernie Davis, Floyd Little, these guys, and, you know, what Syracuse football was back then. And, you know, when I was getting recruited by Syracuse, I honestly didn't even know they had a football team, which was a big thing. And, I mean, now I'm just trying to, you know, put Syracuse back on the map. And I think, you know, the seniors have started to do that, and I think the younger guys are going to keep that going. And it's just been really an honor to, you know, and a blessing to come out here. And I think everything happens for a reason, and I'm just glad, you know, Syracuse gave me a chance.
That's an amazing thing you just said, that you didn't even know they had a football program. Well, you do now. Yeah. In fact, you're a big part of that turnaround. They're number 13 in the AP and the coaches poll, and you've got Louisville at Syracuse Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. Their quarterback, Eric Dungy, my guest. Eric, great to have you on. Nice job. Looking forward to seeing it this weekend. Thanks for doing that.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on again.
2 weeks ago, I went to New York, and I cashed a vacation day traveling back cross-country. My man Grant Napier did what he's been doing for a decade, and he picked me up with a fill-in shift. Unfortunately for Napes, four-time smack-off champ Brad Corona did what he's been doing for a decade plus, and he slipped through on the phones as Burt in Modelo. He proceeded to get in some off-season practice reps at my man's expense. So if you missed the BIC, going BIM on Grant Napier 2 weeks back, here's a small taste.
I mean, I'm not saying you're ugly, Grant. I'm just saying I feel sorry for the makeup people at CBS this morning. You're probably not the best canvas for an artist to paint on, if you know what I mean. These people are literally putting lipstick on a pig when you walk into the studio, Grant. Thoughts and prayers of the makeup team at CBS. Best case scenario, guys, is when you're done with him, he looks like what would happen if Ron Howard got a bunch of Botox. So this is pretty much as good as it gets. How did you land this beautiful woman, Grant? You must have $10 million in a crank the size of that microphone you're talking
about. I said it right after I heard that call. Guest hosts are not show fodder. And as soon as that new jungle rule flew out of my gap, the BIC tweeted at me asking for my vacation schedule and the list of fill-ins that would be coming in the rest of the year. And apparently nuking Napes was not a one-off, because this past Friday, I jumped a bird to Wisco with the fam, and Brad was at it again, this time as Brock in Pacifico. And this time with Brian Weber sitting in the big chair.
Here is Brock in Pacifico.
Okay, wow. That call screener's stupid. Weber, this is actually four-time Smack-Off champion Brad and Corona. How you doing, bub?
I am doing well. Thank you, Brad.
Yeah, good, good. I was looking at your Twitter feed right now, at BW Weber, and I got a quick question. What's that extra W stand for?
My middle name, William.
Ah, nice. Yeah, I knew it wasn't winter, because dear God, Brian Weber, you've got some issues, don't you? Weber, your career is pretty much what would have happened to Kyle Brandt if he had Mark in Hollywood's looks, talents, and total lack of connections. You broadcasted intercollegiate bowling, women's Pac-12 volleyball, NASCAR, tennis. You know you can say no to some of these gigs, don't you, Brian? You're like a random sports broadcasting job hoarder. It's like someone posted all these crappy broadcasting jobs no one wants onto Craigslist, and then you showed up out of nowhere and hauled them all away in your truck. No, no, just put a sign on it that says free and throw it out on the curb. Brian Weber will come by and snatch that thing up, guys. Dude, you went to Stanford for undergrad, USC for your master's, and then you parlayed that world-class education into, well, look, I'll just read one of your own tweets back to you so you can hear what you're doing now on the weekends. Okay, this is from October 28th. Want to hear every touchdown scored with no commercials? Join us for NFL First and Goal. 7 hours of commercial-free listen-ins as touchdowns are being scored around the league. Hey, Weber, you know what would be nicer than hearing every touchdown scored? Watching every touchdown scored. Did your father beat you with an HDMI cable growing up? What do you have against technology, dude? Who's your target market for this, Stevie Wonder? Hey, as long as you're okay pissing in the face of modern technology, Weber, why not just do away with the audio completely? Then you can write down what happens on every touchdown scored, print it out on some newspaper, then drive your bike around throwing it in people's driveways every Monday morning like it's the 1920s all over again.
Extra, extra, Brian Weber, football newspaper here, see? Read the results of every touchdown scored. Totally commercial-free there, boy.
By the way, I love how you write commercial-free like it's a good thing for you. Commercial-free, that's basically a really fancy way of saying, hey, we couldn't find anyone stupid enough to sponsor this crap.
That's two for Brad. Two guest hosts picking me up, two guest hosts put in the ground. And a couple of different approaches from the four-time Smack-Off champ. If his call to Grant was all personal appearance smack, then his call to B-Webb was all personal career smack. A relentless tactical takedown of a resume. I mean, to me, Weber's an extremely accomplished broadcaster with a lot to be proud of. But to Brock in Pacifico, Weber is a broadcaster with a hell of a lot to be ashamed of. Last time this happened, I told Brad, stop wrecking my guest hosts. Stop wrecking my days off, Brad. And then the guy doubles down. So now either I have to unplug the phones before I leave again or not leave at all. And let's be real, neither one of these things is going to happen. I'm not going to tell somebody filling in that they can't take telephone calls, nor am I going to cancel my vacations because Brad might dial up and body bag another fill-in. So, where does that leave us? More importantly, where does that leave me? I thought about that driving in today. The answer became really clear really quickly. This is not my fault. This is not the fill-in's fault. And really, it's not Brad's fault. If he gets through, he gets through. It's the fault of the guy letting him through. You would think a seasoned call screener like Hawk would recognize one of the more recognizable voices in all of sports talk radio, Brad. You'd think that somebody who had already gotten duped by Burt in Modelo would not be fooled again 2 weeks later by Brock in Pacifico. You'd think that, but then you remember we're talking about Hawk. There's a reason why we call Hawk the Sparrow. There's a reason why we called the Sparrow the Pigeon. It's because of things like this. So, instead of admonishing Brad or warning future guest hosts, I think I'm just going to say this. Blame the Pigeon. Because the Pidge is in charge when I leave, and that's two times in a row he's gotten deked by a guy that he should know really well. So, thank you very much to my man Brian Weber for filling in. Thanks to Brad for his continued participation in the show. But no thanks to you, Hawk, for failing to do your job once again. If you're looking for the guilty party here, it's the guy answering the phones, letting this happen every time I leave. Come on, Hawk. Do better. Do better, Hawk. We are joined by tight end Benjamin Watson. Benjamin, so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. So great to talk to you. You know, so many things I want to get into, but let me first start with yesterday with that touchdown you had in the second quarter. Benjamin, what did you see on that play, and then how did it feel to get into the end zone?
Well, it's always good to get in the end zone. Yesterday was, you know, one of those tough fought battles, and we knew going in that that's how it was going to be. That was a play that the coaches kind of drew up for us, and we didn't get the exact look we were looking for, but when you've got a quarterback like Drew, I think he threw the ball before I even released, and I was able to get in the end zone. But anytime you can score a touchdown as an offensive player is always exciting.
You know, I'm going to ask you about your quarterback in a minute, but after you scored, you put the football under your jersey to announce that you and your wife were expecting twins. What an amazing moment. What was it like for you to share that moment with everybody the way you did?
Well, Jim, we had talked about it a couple weeks ago. She's about 13 weeks, and so obviously a lot of times you wait to at least 12 weeks. And the last year has been kind of tough for us. We had a couple miscarriages. We weren't sure if we were going to try. And then if not, you know, the Lord obviously was closing our family at 5, which would have been fine. So we go into the ultrasound a few weeks ago, and there's not one but two babies inside of her. And so we're really excited. We have 5 children now. We'll be having 7 next year in May. But being able to do that, and she was at the game. She was on about the 10th row, and so I was looking at her the whole time. But it was really exciting for our family, and we just really covered everybody's prayers during this time.
It's incredible. Benjamin Watson, my guest. You know, I want to follow up on that because you and I have talked in the past about how important fatherhood and family are to you, and you also mentioned that you had a couple of miscarriages. It's extraordinarily painful, something that would be very understandable that you didn't want to share or you want to keep private, but you have talked about it. You brought that up yourself. Why was that something that you wanted to share with the world?
Well, I'm so proud of my wife, Kirsten, for really stepping into this. I mean, this is something that we hadn't experienced. We had five children without much complications. And then for the last one, like I mentioned, we had a miscarriage at the end of last year. We had another one beginning of this year. And it was really, really hard for her, hard for me as her husband, hard for the entire family. Whenever there's a loss, you feel that loss. And there's so many millions of families, men and women, who are going through this, but it's something that people don't talk about. A lot of times you don't know what to say. When somebody says they have a miscarriage, the person that had the miscarriage may feel some sort of guilt. We never really provide closure when it comes to a preborn baby passing away in the womb. And so what's been amazing is her willingness and her courage to really be vulnerable and speak about these things and write about what's happened has really opened a whole new door of again, thousands, millions of people who are suffering and have felt like they've been doing it by themselves. So I'm really proud of her. And the reason why I wanted to share was look, hey, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with this pregnancy. Nobody does. But we do know that when people know about it, people can pray for us. They can send their well wishes to us. And they can go through this process with us because there are so many people that have suffered that type of loss in the past.
Benjamin Watson joining us. Benjamin, I know for a fact that people listening, there have to be a large number of people listening right now that know exactly what you're talking about, that have experienced what you're talking about, and it has to be helpful. And I appreciate you sharing that so much. You know, you go back to that game yesterday, you had a ton of momentum in the second quarter, and then the Rams get right back into it. It would have been easy to let that game slip away, but you battled right back. What's it say about the character of this Saints team?
Resilience, mental toughness, understanding going into the game. Look, all week watching the Rams on film, having watched them the last several weeks play, we knew that this was a team that is very talented. Obviously, they're well coached, that they're playing with a lot of momentum because of they hadn't lost a game. We knew even going in at halftime that the game was not over and that they were going to come back, that they were going to make this a competitive game. That was not a surprise to us. We knew we had to respond. And so what I'm most proud of is the fact that, look, offensively we did very well in the first half. The third quarter we had a lull. We didn't play as well. Couldn't move the ball as much. The Rams started to come back. But our defense gave us chance after chance. And when you go into a game like that, it's about complementary football. We hear it all the time. But when you have a team where the defense can step up, when the offense is struggling and vice versa, special teams plays a role. And then the role of being at home. You know, having the crowd. I really believe that the crowd played a role in the game. So we're happy to get the win.
Benjamin Watson joining us. Big win for the Saints. You mentioned your quarterback, Drew Brees. There was this fascinating moment with the two of you earlier this season. You caught his 500th career touchdown pass, naturally wanted to give him the ball, but he wanted you to keep the ball, and he said, quote, one of the greatest things about the 500th touchdown pass, it was caught by one of my favorite teammates of all time. I couldn't think of a better guy to catch this touchdown than Ben Watson. He's a terrific vet, and I look up to him, end quote. I mean, that's incredible praise. What's it mean for you to hear something like that from Drew Brees?
It's really flattering. It was crazy. You know, I caught the pass, and I was like, there's no way I'm keeping this because I know what this means for history. And, you know, just as a fan of football, being on the receiving end of that pass, so I knew I was going to give it to him. And then he's like, no, you keep it. I'm like, dude, you're crazy. This is history. I'm not keeping this ball. This is number 500. But he's, when you hear – somebody like him, who I respect greatly, say those types of words about you, it really makes me smile, and it's really flattering, and it has truly been an honor of my career, highlight of my career, to stay in the locker room with him for 4 years now, to have our families experience each other, and to even go out with him and his wife on a double date night, those sorts of things, just spend time with each other. He's somebody that I greatly respect, obviously as a football player, but really more importantly, as a leader, somebody who cares about other people, who makes everybody around him so much better.
Benjamin Watson, my guest. I'm losing that connection a little bit, but I'm going to fight for that because I always look forward to this conversation. Now, Benjamin, what about Michael Thomas? Now, I've done this long enough that I remember talking to Joe Horn back in the day. I got such a kick out of this guy. So when I saw him go to the goalpost to pull out that flip phone, I knew exactly what he was doing, like a lot of people did. I thought that was awesome. What did you make of his catch and then this his celebration with the homage to Joe Horn?
The funniest thing was I said to Michael, do you even know who, even remember watching Joe Horn, because you had to be in elementary school when he was, you know, scoring touchdowns and pulling the phone. I remember when that happened. And so Michael, you know, if anybody could do it, it would be him. He is, has been really special to be on a team with him and to see his work ethic. This guy runs every route full speed in practice. He never wants to come out of even practice. He obviously doesn't want to come out of games. He stays after practice with Drew to get the throws right. He listens to coaching. He's very coachable. You hear him in meetings, yes, sir, when the wide receiver coach or when Drew is telling him something. And he can get so much better. That's the crazy thing about it. So when he did that, though, he had all of us laughing and rolling. I was like, what is he doing this? Oh, my gosh, he got a flip phone. The flip phone was key. Where he found a flip phone, I don't know.
Dude, he found two. I don't know where he got one,
exactly.
But he found two. Where did he find two flip phones?
Exactly.
Listen, before you go, I mean, on top of the work that you've been doing, on top of your work with fighting human trafficking, you and teammate DeMario Davis have been involved in advocating for HB 265, which restored voting rights to people who have been convicted of crimes but have served their time. Why is that a cause that's so important to you? How'd you get involved with that?
Well, when I signed here in April, I wasn't at a free agency. I didn't really know about it. Then it was brought to my attention, and as somebody who really wants to fight for kindness, fight for justice, fight for righteousness, this kind of falls into that bucket for me. People who have done a crime should rightfully be charged or rightfully be confined and pay a certain penalty, but I also believe in restoration. And so once those people are brought out, once those people have paid their debt to society, there's no reason why they shouldn't have the right to vote. The right to vote is what makes America great, honestly. It's what separates America from so many other countries. And when that right is taken away, someone's voice is taken away. You know, as we go into the midterms, as we go into the general elections in a couple of years, going to the casting your ballot is something that the wealthy person can do as well as the very, very poor person could do, and they all have one voice. And so when I heard about that and with DeMario penning that op-ed, look, we didn't make the law pass. What we did was simply support those who have been doing this work for a long time, who have been fighting for decades to change this law. And it's really been great to actually meet people and speak with people who for the first time next year will be able to vote.
He is a Super Bowl champion, a two-time Walter Payton Man of the Year finalist. He is an author. He is involved in a number of causes. He's had an amazing NFL career, and the Saints are red hot. They've won seven straight. Benjamin Watson, my guest. Benjamin, so good to have you back on. Always look forward to the conversation. I appreciate you so much. Great to have you.
As always, Jim. Thanks. Talk to you later.
So to be fully transparent, I did not pick it up. I have no idea what I'm getting into. It may, in fact, be the legend, or it might not be. Let's find out. We go to Los Angeles. And again, if it is him, I can't believe it, but he's got a reason to call. Aya Frady, my man, is that you?
I want to talk sports with you. Yeah, I am not going to be calling your guest hosts while you're away, Jim. That's for sure. But I just happened to hear you're open today. And, you know, no matter how much I may love you and love your program, the old man felt forced to exhume himself in order to set a few things straight. Oh, yeah, Jim, the GOAT is Hoodie, not Brady. Yeah, what so-called GOAT of anything can coach for six full NFL seasons with only one winning record among the six? Six long, Jim, without a single division title ever. One winning record in 6 years. In the other five seasons, old GOAT Hoodie averaged a 6-10 record. Oh, Hoodie is the GOAT, Jim. Yeah, it's just not at NFL coaching. Hoodie is the greatest of all time fabrication of bamboozlement in NFL coaching history. And there have been numerous other contenders for that crown over the years, Jim. You remember how everyone called Mike Shanahan the mastermind back in the day, and then John Elway retired. Yeah, well, Shanahan's winning percentage without Elway is better than Hoodie's
is without Brady. So who's the GOAT in bamboozlement? It is definitely grumbly old Hoodie, who's got you and everyone else suckered into thinking he's a genius. Meanwhile, those of us without long-term memory loss remember that Hoodie was a conclusively proven six-year retread loser of a coach before one Thomas Brady showed up and magically transformed loser Hoodie into Patriot Way. Of course, the Patriot Way has lost exactly one division title in the last 15 years. When was that? Oh, wait, I remember. It was the one season when Tom Brady was lost for the season in the first game. So I wish to correct myself, Jim. The GOAT of bamboozlement has actually coached seven seasons without the GOAT of football, and he has won not a single division title without the greatest player at the most important position in all of sports in his lineup. That is 0-7 in division. Less rings for Hoodie Brady. So why then did the Patriots beat the Packers yesterday, Jim? Well, here's two factors. Here's two factors I suspect may have been involved. One, Brady outplayed Rodgers. Two, the Patriots are a 7-2 football team. The Packers are a 3-4 football team. Just in case any of your listeners don't watch football, Jim, I thought I'd let them in on a little secret. The Packers are not very good. Meanwhile, that defensive wizard, the Hoodie, had a week and a half to prep up for young Patty Mahomes coming to Foxborough a few weeks ago. A week and a half. Everyone was saying it was time for the kid to get his comeuppance at the hands of the genius.
Kenny, let me jump in for 1 second. My concern is, if you keep going, you're going to take me right to the smack-off. And the smack-off is not until summer.
Good night now!